What's up, Fanatics? It's time for another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. The seniors are back for a holiday edition. I'm Jared Stansberry, as always, joined by my friend Rob Gray. Happy holidays, Rob.
Happy holidays to you. And I might say, I want to say, congratulations on your Spanish.
Oh, thank you. Gracias.
Passing. Yeah.
Gracias.
It's muy excelente that si. You have pulled through with flying colors, I believe. I mean, my Spanish is a little bit rusty. You'd probably talk circles around me now, but
no.
I need to refresh it with some Rosetta Stone or something.
Chris is going to be so upset that we started this by talking in Spanish.
I did it just for him. I did it just for him.
Iowa State got beat for the first time Saturday afternoon at Wells Fargo Arena. What? I was at the game. I know you were at the game.
Mm-hmm.
I was like five rows from the top of the upper deck. Yeah. I didn't even know that they opened that upper deck for the Big Five Classic. Big Four Classic. I don't think they did the last time I was there, but my dad, he just kept saying, he's like, man, I screwed up. Man, I screwed up. I was like, I mean, at least we're here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Better than nothing, I guess.
Yeah. It's a nice vantage point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nice arena. Obviously, a tough loss. The defense on the ball screen, you know, leaving shooters open. And obviously, when Washman penetrated, heck, when he didn't penetrate, I mean, shooting fadeaways over McKay, I mean, he was just magnificent. And as the guy said today, this morning, in an early media availability, that, you know, as they went back and watched it, you know, you and I played a heck of a game.
Right.
I mean, a lot of guys don't hit that percentage from three, particularly when they started off 9 of 11. I think they ended up at 58, 59. The same as overall, you know, unguarded. A lot of times guys are you know, in game speed are going to miss more than they missed. So tough loss, not, you know, unprecedented. You know, North Carolina season didn't end when they went and lost, even without Marcus Page at the McLeod Center. So relatively chipper spirits, it seemed, today, this morning, at the Sioux Cup.
And I think you can tell that they're excited to get back out on the floor, you know, and I don't really want to touch that much on Cincinnati since it'll be pretty much over by the time really most of the people probably get a chance to listen to this. But I think that they're really excited about the opportunity to be able to bounce back after this loss by, you know, you only wait 2 days. It's not like some of those times where they had to wait a whole week before they played their next game. And you jump right back into it. You play a really good team and maybe the best team you've played all season long. I don't think there's anything that can help you refocus, maybe quite like that.
Yeah, I mean, you want to measure yourself, and you want to measure how you respond to adversity, which has been the big thing stretching back to Hoiberg's days. And last season, they didn't always respond all that well.
Right.
This is a great test of that. Obviously, third game without Nazmi Trulong. Deontay Burton got his feet wet. We'll see what he can contribute. Different configuration when you plug in a small forward with some perimeter game, but nonetheless a guy who's you know, around the basket a lot of times versus Naz.
There's actually something that I want to say about that. There, when I'm leaving Wells Fargo Arena Saturday afternoon, I heard people saying things like, man, Deontay really didn't show us what we expected. Or I expected him to do a better job of filling Naz's role. People need to realize that that's not what Deontay Burton's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to go out there and shoot 40% from three. He made a three.
Yep.
He made another one after a whistle that was kind of still in the flow of the play.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, Deontay Burton is not going to shoot three-pointers 40%.
Yeah.
And he's not going to fill the Naz Mitrulong role because that's not the kind of player he is. But you saw what he's going to be able to bring on the offensive glass where he hustles every single play.
Yep.
I remember one specifically where two you and I guys kind of converged on the ball and he went – sprinting in there, and I think he knocked over both guys because he's just that big, he's that thick, and
the bull in the china shop,
right? Exactly. And I think that could be exactly what they need because, you know, you see when they lost a guy like Dustin Hogue, that energy that he brought, he was a bull in a china shop that way. I mean, they're built differently, but that's kind of the same kind of player that he was. And I think if you see Deontay bring that kind of attitude and that kind of game, this makes it a way tougher team. Just not even maybe on the floor tougher, just tougher, you know?
No, I agree. I mean, I think we got exactly – I got exactly what I expected.
Right.
As you mentioned, the play where he just, you know, ran over – you know, pummeled a couple guys. I think foul called on one of them, but great putback basket, you know, hit the three, pretty good energy. Obviously, legs are going to be different no matter how hard you run in practice, no matter how hard you run, period, just getting yourself in trying to get yourself in game shape. It's a dimension, it is a dimension that they need. I mean, McKay can get in there and entangle, but when you have a guy like that who is, you know, McKay said on Media Day, and other guys have said, when he wants to be, he can be an elite defender. Well, if you're bringing him off the bench and playing him anywhere from, you know, 12 to 25 minutes, whatever it ends up being, that's a huge asset. And I think Hollis Cook's going to continue to get better as he one thing I really like about him is he's not forcing things. I mean, right. he had the bad miss from three, which will happen. I mean, yeah.
That looked like some of the shots you were putting up this morning.
Wait a minute. When the pressure was on, you had your phone up.
When the bright lights were on.
Yeah. I mean, swish.
Yeah.
I mean, it was long two, though. It was a long two. So I'm not sure Fred would have been pleased.
No, definitely not.
But, I mean, Cook brings it defensively. We know what Matt Thomas can do. Bohannon and some guys really, you know, got into him Saturday night and he didn't force things either. You kind of wish they maybe would have found a way to get him a little bit more involved.
Yeah.
But, you know, even though he's clearly playing at a level that he hasn't played at before, hey, everyone's going to have a game where it's not quite, you know, there. Mm-hmm. And you and I did play very good defense. Even though Iowa State shot a pretty good percentage, they took away some things. So well, I think it's intriguing what they can be, even with Naz out.
Yeah, and the thing I'll say about, you know, Iowa State shot well, but when you're trading twos for threes consistently, I think it was Kirk Holland, you know, a friend of the program, who brought up, you know, if you make 10 twos, another team makes 15 threes, you know, you've got to make however many more baskets to be able to keep up with them, you know, and that's tough. It's really tough to be able to battle back like that. I mean, you can't expect Iowa State to go whatever it was, 3 of 20 from three every game. And I don't think you can expect you and I to go 13 of 22 every game.
Either. No, absolutely not. That's the best game they had. Even number of made threes, I think they had 12 before. Cyclone, you know, give you and I credit. I mean, Jacobson even said after the game how they knew Niang was going to score. They more or less were sort of granting that. Not that they weren't defending him, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But they contested a lot of the perimeter shots, not all of them. And, you know, they not sped up, but they mucked things up for Iowa State's offense in terms of spacing, in terms of ball movement and everything else, that some of those shots that even were open seemed a little bit hurried.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's a credit to them. They had a great game plan. They're a good basketball team. And even though it wasn't truly a neutral court because there were decidedly more Iowa State fans, you know, it's something to learn from. Are there problems, you know, the defense the last couple games in particular, and you might even include the first half against Iowa, was really, really bad.
Yeah.
After they'd shown signs of, you know, against some quality competition in those first, you know, six games or seven games, you know, making big strides there. So, you know, there are points of concern, but it is just, you know, a one game and a loss to you and I is not going to, it's not going to break you. That's a good basketball team. And, you know, obviously a big, big indication of what's to come with Cincinnati before the tune-up with Coppin State and then on to Oklahoma.
Am I crazy to think that Wes Washington might be the best mid-major guard in college basketball?
The way he played Saturday night, I mean,
that dude's going to be in the league if he plays that way all season long.
I think so.
I mean, he'll be a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, if he can put together that type of game, he's got to clean it up a little bit. He did have some turnovers, but he was, I mean, it was in his hands constantly. He was facilitating every single possession.
And it didn't seem like he ever forced things.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, there were a couple situations where he dribbled into some traps and stuff like that. But other than that, it just seemed everything that he did was in the flow of the game, really.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty impressive to be able to put up the numbers that he did and perform as well as he did without just in the flow of the game. There was one other thing I was going to say about Iowa State on Saturday was I feel like they had some guys that did force things. They weren't going to let the game come to them. And the one that kind of sticks out to me is Abdul Nader. And it just seems like he gets himself into situations where he sees a lane, and he gets going so fast that he can't. He doesn't think about the possibility that the lane could close, and he'll get himself into a position where he's, you know, standing on the baseline, and he tries to throw a bounce pass across the lane to Jamel McKay, and it gets kicked away and goes out of bounds or something like that. And it just seems like some of the guys need to slow down sometimes. Like, they're just going too fast.
No, I agree. And that Nader's a good example. He's so good when he's in the flow.
Right.
He's so good. And you're right. I mean, some of those baseline drives, you know something's coming and it's not going to be good because he's going to kind of get himself in. It's almost as if, you know, this is just pure speculation. He gets a little overconfident or he gets a little bit of tunnel vision. I know I'm going to be able to make a play off of this, whether I finish or whether I'm able to dish and get it to somebody else. But, you know, overall his game's been awfully good this season. So we'll hope that that forced aspect of it gets minimized going forward.
It just seems like there's way too many situations when he drives baseline and ends up with nowhere to go with the basketball, and he ends up just jumping and throwing the ball somewhere hoping that it gets corralled by somebody.
Yeah.
And that's definitely not a very good strategy for attacking the basket.
Yeah, got to root that out for sure. Because there were a couple where you knew he had nothing. He just threw it back sort of near a guy and, you know, bad turnover. They weren't too bad on the turnover front in that game, but just costly when it did happen.
I know it's like the only way that teams can really defend him, but I want to know when George is going to get tired of being rooted out, so when he tries to post up so far that he's almost standing at the three-point line, or the officials stop it.
Yeah.
Because that drives me insane to just watch a guy try and post up. And it happened to Jamel too. Time and time again, they'd try to post up and you'd see the guy behind him with their leg pushing him out.
Yeah.
Pushing him out further and further away from the hoop. And you shouldn't be able to do that. And I don't know. I mean, that's frustrating. It's frustrating to watch basketball and see these guys be able to get position, and yet then a guy's just laying on them from behind and pushing them clear out, and they don't have their position anymore just because they're able to push them.
You know, and that's supposed to be one of the new points of emphasis.
Exactly.
But, guys have been getting away with that. Some, you know, George can obviously get things going with a spin and a quick jab step or something from the top of the key. There, Jamil's got to be in deep to make, and he has some nice moves, but it's got to be a paint based move for him. And I you'd think that would, but boy, you'd think those would have been called, as everyone's been talking about, early in the season versus do they revert a little bit because of what everyone's used to.
That's
it will be a problem going forward if that's allowed to take place to the extent that it has.
The first thing I'll say is one situation I can remember specifically was one where Jamel was posted up on the right block. He's getting rooted out, and they tried to throw it to him, and he mishandles a pass. He's able to get it back on the wing, and he faces up on the wing right then, and he decided to back down. It's like he'd gotten rooted out all the way. He should have just kicked it right back and then tried to get his position back and do it again.
Yeah.
And instead, he got rooted out and he said, I'm done with this. And he tried to back the guy down and got it stolen away. He got doubled and got it stolen away.
Yeah.
And I think it turned into a bucket. No, I think it actually turned into that and one that they got on the, I think it was Jeremy Morgan got an and one or something like that. And yeah, that just really makes me mad to see officials do that. And to see them be so inconsistent, I don't know how you felt about it, but they seemed inconsistent on Saturday.
Especially
from one half to the other.
Like 80% of that game was old rules.
Right.
And 20% was, oh my gosh, we're supposed to be officiating differently.
Yeah.
And they just, it would interchange. You never knew when it would happen, that it would be, here's the way it's supposed to be, and here's the way it was.
Well, and I don't think I think Iowa State maybe, or no, you and I maybe finally got into the bonus right at the end of the first half. Mm-hmm. And I think other than that, the two teams maybe only had 10 fouls between each other. Obviously a little bit more than 10, but.
Yeah.
And then in the second half, I think the first team got into the bonus with 12 minutes left.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
No. It inconsistent is a good way to characterize how that game was called. Again, not affecting.
I mean, it didn't affect the outcome.
Any team any worse than the other.
No.
But Yeah, it was such a fast and furious game, though. I mean, in a lot of ways, it was really, really entertaining, even though from obviously an Iowa State fan's perspective, seeing you and I get as many open looks from three off of Washburn penetration and kick or and then, of course, hit them, it had to have been maddening. But nonetheless, I think the pace of play was pretty good. A lot of big shots made, a lot of big-time shots by a number of different players. So I don't think the flow was bad, but you're right. I mean, it's just one time it's not a foul, one time it is. And those are right. The worst types of games because then guys don't know. And fans, obviously, are going to react, you know. One of one of the better officiated games we've seen this season for sure.
No, definitely not. Man, I don't know. I don't know what much else there is to say about that.
What about, let's talk Monte a little bit, because he took a couple hard hits in that game, particularly the one from Morgan that had him wincing before those two missed free throws.
Dude, I've got to say one more thing about you and I. Sorry.
This just popped
into my head. I love watching that team play because I love being able to sit there and say, that kid went to Waverly Shell Rock. Mm. That kid went to Iowa City West. That kid went to
Cedar Rapids, Washington.
Exactly. I think that's so much fun. I was sitting there with my dad and just time after, like, person after person, you're like, oh, Ted Friedman, he went to Ankeny.
Yep.
Clint Carlson, oh, he went to Waverly Shell Rock. Yep. I'm pretty sure that's where he
went. Washburn, I think, was Washington.
Yeah. Or I thought he was from Waukee. No, I could be wrong. You're right, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. But, yeah, I think that's really cool. I like that a lot.
I agree. And then the fact that Jacobson is such a good coach, and Chris had that tweet about what an elite coach he is. And
he kicked me and Chris out of practice when we went to you and I for the women's story. Game.
But he had good reason. You guys were kind of in a pickle because you were told you could go there, and guys are kind of looking at you like, what the heck are these guys doing, setting up to do a radio thing while we're trying to practice?
I didn't tell Chris this, but I think I'm the one that gave us away. It was my fault. I got us kicked out.
Did you go out and dunk at one point or something? Well,
no, but I think I drew attention to myself because there's a kid that he's actually had just announced he was transferring last week, but he played at DMAC with one of my roommates.
Okay.
So I pointed it at him and I said, hey, that's Arius. He's friends with my roommate. Mm. And then that's right when Jacobson looked at me. And he just stood there and he's like, had that who the heck are these guys look on his face. Yeah. And it wasn't long later before we were escorted.
Given the boot.
Yeah, we were escorted out.
Politely, as I understand.
Well, yeah, exactly. They did help us find a new spot. So there's that. I always have that story about when Ben Jacobson kicked us out of the McLeod Center.
those are the fun stories in sports, when sports coverage.
Right.
Those little weird things that happened. But again, agreed on the UNI. I mean, to be able to build a team that's always competitive with mostly Iowa guys and then supplementing with guys from
Wisconsin,
Minnesota, you know, St. Louis area sometimes, or Kansas City area sometimes, et cetera. It's hard to not like you. I mean, I know some people dislike you and I because of the composition of the fans and all of that. And I get that because I used to cover their football team and they kick at 4:05 and it was terrible for our state edition deadline at the Des Moines Register, which was 7:00. So I'd be sending game stories with no quotes and two versions sometimes. It was a close game with X's for the score because it wasn't going to be over and they needed to get stuff on the page. And the only reason, of course, that they kick off at 4:05 is because Iowa plays so many 11 a.m. games and they know nobody's going to show up if they were to play at 11 or noon or 1 or something like that. So I get that, but the teams, well worth rooting for when they're not playing the Cyclones, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. But now to turn the page to Monte. Mm-hmm. People were concerned that he might be pretty beat up going into this game with Cincinnati, but I'd say that some of the stuff that the guy said this morning probably relieved some of those thoughts, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I think so. And he himself, saying...
Well, him too.
He acknowledged that, he certainly has taken some heart. I mean, anybody can see that.
Yeah.
Going back to the Buffalo game where he got the hip issue, which did require some, somewhat extensive treatments for a while there after that. But, but he said he's good. McKay said he's good. Prome said he seems to be physically sound at this point. And, you know, the only thing Monte wants to do is get the bitter taste out of his mouth, because he gave a lot of props to Washman as he spoke to us today, because, you know, he started off defensively on him. I can't remember how many guys guarded him for the Cyclones. Obviously, they were working that high pick and roll so often. It was, you know, McKay ended up on him a number of times when they didn't switch.
Yeah.
You know, Monte did not have his best game. 8 points, 6 assists, 3 of 10 shooting. No turnovers again. And missed a couple of those free throws. Did hit a couple big ones as the Cyclones were making their push to rescue themselves down the stretch. But you know, he'll be back. I mean, we know what he gives, and that's elite point guard play almost every single game, and record-setting assist to turnover ratio that he's on pace for more or less again. So he'll be fine. That was definitely good news out of today, that it's not lingering, the effects of that hit, particularly that Morgan gave him on that breakaway layup try.
And there's – I mean, this team can't afford to have anybody else go down at this point, really.
No. I mean, it's season over at that point. I mean, if somebody like – if Monte were to go down, I mean – God forbid the season, but if you had to miss a few games,
yeah.
I mean, who are you? What are you doing? Are you playing George a ton of point forward, and then, you know, Monte's the one guy that can probably on the roster, I think, that could probably play 40 minutes a game, because he's almost done it a few times, not only this year but in previous years. Everyone else is going to need a little bit of a break, because you know they're pounding inside a little bit too and all that. So that's, you know.
Big Stu.
Perish the thought. Yeah. Perish the thought if he were to get a more serious injury, because obviously the depth is okay at this point as Burton, I think, gets mixed in and acclimated. But, boy, one of those principal players gets anything remotely serious. And,
yeah.
And then it's, you know, what now?
All right. You want to switch gears?
Yeah,
talk about some Christmas.
I'd love to talk Christmas.
Are you a Christmas fan, or do you feel like Christmas is overrated?
It kind of depends. I think
or all holidays. We're not gonna discriminate against Hanukkah and Kwanzaa.
Yeah, all that stuff.
All of the other holiday season.
Indeed. Of people of all faiths or not faiths. You know
exactly.
You know, the family aspect is big. I think it's important to remind ourselves of the, you know, as hokey as it might seem, the even though it's not Thanksgiving, you should be pretty grateful for what you have in terms of your family and in terms of any material items you possess.
Actually, no, I'm just pissed about all the cool things that I didn't get.
That you didn't? Well, you're still young. I mean, look, when I was your age, yeah, that's all I was thinking about. Then you get into as you get a little bit older, Christmas comes down a little bit.
Yeah.
And then when you have kids, it's like you're a kid again. So that's a fun aspect of it. But I enjoy the holidays in part because of I'm fortunate I get to see family as much as I do, just on a semi-regular basis. But it's just neat to everyone get together and share some of the traditions and just kind of take stock a little bit and get ready for the new year. I'm kind of disappointed it won't be a white Christmas, but at the same time, I can't be disappointed that the weather's been so good in December. So no ice storms, no giant snowstorms except for that one, maybe 6 to 8 inch deal early in the month. So a lot to feel good about, more about gifts for others now for me than for myself.
What's on your list, though? You have anything that you want?
Well, you always have things that you want.
Well, okay, yeah.
We usually just kind of get them as we go. There are lots of things that I probably won't get. I know it's on the kids list. We're getting one of those Sphero things. You tweeted one about a droid.
Like the BB-8 off Star Wars.
Yeah, I don't think it's the droid version, but it's a robot type thing like that. And then
my buddy is a. He's in, like, the managerial program at Target, And I told him, I was like, if you can find one of those BB-8 droids,
yeah,
I want one. Like, you need to figure out a way to get me one. He said that that's probably the hottest thing in their store right now is those droids. Like, if they get a shipment in, I mean, they're gone in a day.
Yeah.
So.
Well, my wife got it ordered for the kids. Now, see, they're going to have to share some things. And hopefully they're not always great about
they
sharing.
They aren't listening.
Oh, no. 10 years old, 7 years old.
I was watching Sports Center when I was 10.
Yeah, but they don't even know I do a podcast. They just know I go off sometimes somewhere, and every now and then my goofy-looking mug is on TV when there are interviews, and they're like, hey, there's Daddy. That's pretty much the extent of it. But, a lot of fun things for them. But, again, there'll be some sharing going on, so
right.
That's always a work in progress. I know I wasn't good at sharing.
We were going to talk about some of our Christmas memories and stuff. The first one I'll say is, what's the best gift you've ever gotten? We'll start there. Best Christmas gift.
The one that I will always remember, and, of course, this will show how old I am. There are two. I got one of those electronic football games.
Okay.
You know, the ones with the...
that shakes? Yeah, okay, yeah.
I think my parents still have it some back in some back room in their basement.
We have one of those in my house. I should bring it up here.
And this is so old school, though, that there's the guys are two pieces, and one is like an all-yellow top with white pants, and one is an all-red top with white pants.
So and it's Packers versus Chiefs.
Yeah, something like that, or the gold team versus the red team, the Cyclone scrimmage or something.
Yeah,
I thought that was really cool. And then they had this kind of action figure guy called Big Jim way back. Nobody will get this reference. And they had this thing called a rescue rig that was like an emergency like vehicle. This dude was
he looks like he's straight off Baywatch.
Yeah, he was an adventurous dude. He was kind of like. G.I. Joe to an extent, except he was just kind of an outdoorsman.
What does that say?
You got the karate chop thing. You push a button on the back, and you'll come down, and they had a pre-broken plastic board that he'd crack for you.
Oh, there's a Buffalo Bill edition?
Yep.
Big Jack. I don't think they could make the Big Jack nowadays. That's probably really racist.
Yeah, Big Jim was just straight up. There was nothing involved beyond that. He was just a dude.
Yeah,
just a tough dude that did all kinds of adventurous things, and it seemed pretty cool to a kid. So I remember that being under the tree, and I was ecstatic.
When would that have been?
Oh hell, probably mid 70s. I was probably 5-6 years old. But okay. Those are the Christmas memories. Even at your age, you're probably your favorite gifts are probably from around then, I would guess. Because as you get a little bit older, some of the stuff you get, whether it be computer upgrade, laptop upgrade, all that stuff, that kind of comes in as a matter of course. It's not a hold off to Christmas kind of thing.
I remember when I was like, okay, so this would have been in 2002, so I would have been like 8.
Mm.
My aunt got me a PlayStation 2 and NCAA football with 2003 with Joey Harrington on the cover.
Nice.
So I remember that one. And then there was one, I think this one would have been a couple of years before that, but I got like a Pokemon like battle station, and it was the coolest thing ever. I don't know if Pokemon's a cool thing anymore, but...
Yeah, my son likes it for some reason. I don't know what.
For some reason,
he just started getting into it. He's into Goosebumps books and lots of things. He made a bloody Christmas tree at church the other day. He made a point to write that it was blood. So I, be keeping an eye on him a little bit. But he's into some of that horror stuff. But no, he wanted some Pokemon cards. He dragged his mom to. Make an extra trip to Target to get some Pokemon cards. So at least for him, he's enjoying it.
Yeah, I liked Pokemon a lot. And I like Goosebumps, too. He's reading the Ghostbumps books, you said?
Yeah.
That's outstanding.
He's just sort of getting to that level where he kind of understands some of what he's reading anyway.
Do they still read the Magic Treehouse books?
Have you
heard of those ones?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the series of Unfortunate Events books?
Yeah. Not totally into that. My daughter's reading well above her grade level. She's just reading all kinds of, I guess, more involved books now. But
Don Quixote and Pride and Prejudice and stuff like that?
Yeah, not quite to that level, although she's getting a box set of some of those classics to go with. But a lot of the young adult books that are aimed more for 12+, she's 10. But yeah, Magic Treehouse, we've got like 25 of those sitting around at home. They've all rolled through them. The treehouse started to spin and all that stuff. All
right, flipping to the other side of the coin, worst Christmas gift you've ever gotten?
I was a terrible, terrible brat probably early adolescence. And these family friends, we did a little extra Christmas thing with them every year, and they got me two of my least favorite gifts. They got me these sort of ceramic goalpost bookends with a little kind of blue cleated shoe on it. And I was like, I did not react well to it. I acted all disappointed, you know. I mean, it's terrible. You know, you're at that age, it's kind of hard to be anything but a punk.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say that. I'm hoping my son won't be a punk in 5 years or whatever when he's there. But and then they also got me a ceramic football bank. It's just a football. No, it was plastic, actually. It wasn't ceramic. And I was like, a bank? Really? So that was back-to-back when I'm an adolescent, when everything's going and you're all moody and weird anyway. So I remember those. But they're fantastic family friends. So I felt really bad, too, that I would react. I could have at least put on a good front. But at that age, I just wasn't capable of hiding my displeasure.
Yeah. For me, I don't remember what year this would have been. I know I was in high school, and my grandpa, I used to wear shorts, like, every day. It didn't matter what the temperature was outside, because when you're in high school, you don't go outside, you know, you go to school in the morning, and then you stay inside all day. You never go outside until the day's over, and he was not a fan of me wearing shorts every single day. Mm. So he took it upon himself to buy me a nice pair of Brett Favre Wrangler jeans that were the most hideous jeans I've ever seen in my entire life. Oh, my God.
Were they acid washed or were they?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was not good. I'm sorry, Grandpa. You know, God rest your soul, but those jeans were bad. But, and then I think this had to have been the next year he got me a gas can for my car. I still have it. I've used it, and it's, I think the first time I ever used it was when I was working at the golf course in Clarinda.
Yeah.
And I ran out of gas, on the fifth hole, which is quite a ways away from where our shop is and stuff.
Yeah.
So I have to walk all the way back. I get there, and he's like, oh, yeah, we don't have a gas can. So, I mean, you would think usually you'd have a gas can at a golf course.
Absolutely,
but I was like, well, hey, it's a good thing I've got one in the back of my car. So I just went and got it and walked right out there with my tank of gas so I could fill the lawnmower back up.
Sometimes those gifts that don't seem like much end up serving a purpose that you...
And then my roommate last year ran out of gas on Lincoln Way. He'll hate me for telling this story, but he calls me, says, I ran out of gas. Can you bring me your gas can? And he's like, I'm on Lincoln Way right in front of Hilton. And I get there and traffic is like stopped going around him because he's parked right in the middle of Lincoln Way with his hazards on. And I have to pick him up. We go get the gas. We bring it right back and he's got to stand in the middle of the road filling up his car on Lincoln Way.
But nonetheless, what would have happened? You would have had to have it towed out of there and much, much greater expense.
All because my grandpa wanted to make sure that I didn't get stranded somewhere.
He had the foresight
to
know that you would need that gas can, not only once, but at least twice, and maybe many more times.
I was going to say, it's still sitting right outside my door.
Ready to help.
Yeah, exactly. How about your favorite Christmas carol or Christmas song?
See, I really like that one, the Christmas song, chestnuts roasting on an open fire. I really like that, and I always like for one of the more, church-themed or hymn ones, We Three Kings is a good one. Silent Night is always kind of a good one, just I don't know if it's a sense of peace over you or whatever when that's being sung. Those would probably be at the top of my list.
I think Jingle Bell Rock is always pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got to go with Frosty the Snowman. I really like Frosty.
Dumpity thump thump.
Yeah, exactly. He's just, and I really like that cartoon too. That might be my favorite one, except for, well, we were talking about this before, and I told you I own Santa Claus Coming to Town.
Mm-hmm.
That will always be my all-time favorite, but Frosty would be right behind.
Yeah, I was a big Rudolph guy. Came out 5 years before I was born. Frosty had not been...
What year did Rudolph come out then?
1964.
Okay, I was going to say, so it came out 30 years before I was born.
I was born in the spring of the Summer of Love year, you know? I was born right around the time of the, you know, first lunar landing.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm freaking old. But nonetheless, I love Rudolph. I don't know what it is. All the later incarnations of it are terrible. I even hated the Shiny New Year one, which only came out. That was still produced in that era.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible. That Baby New Year was annoying as hell. But I always liked Frosty, too. I think that came out in the mid-70s or 77, maybe somewhere in there like that, though. But good stories. Good stories. And my wife's favorite is that Santa Claus is Coming to Town. That's solid, too. I like the old stars they have for him.
Yeah.
Like in Rudolph, there's this Burl Ives dude that was a folk singer.
Right.
And then in Frosty, isn't it this Jimmy Durante guy who was a... Frosty the Snowman was a jolly, happy soul.
Yeah.
That guy. He was like an old comedian from way, way, way even before my time. Santa Claus Coming to Town has some, too, like... trying to remember. I say one of the...
I'm going to look up...
Fred Astaire or something
like
that?
Look up the story of these claymation Christmas movies. I want to know why there's not more. Why don't we have more claymation Christmas movies?
I think they've tried to produce fake claymation imitations in the future, and they just don't... it's a good question, though. Claymation was pretty cool. It goes all the way back.
I feel like there's got to be some way that we could get another one of these classics. You know,
maybe
are we just out of stories?
Maybe, yeah, that could be. Maybe Chris could rally some, since he's got a lot of pull all over the globe. Maybe he could co-produce something.
That'll be the next Cyclone Fanatic movement. Get a new claymation Christmas movie made.
Absolutely, totally new characters.
We need to act
totally
in it.
New.
We need to have our voices in it.
That would be fantastic. That would be fantastic.
Someone help us make a claymation movie of our own. Maybe not even Christmas, just a claymation movie.
It could be a short.
Yeah, there you go.
6 to 8 minutes or something like that.
It would have our characters from Johnny Illustrated.
That would be even better. We'd have to be doing something. It would be some type of costume. Maybe we could drive the Big Jim rescue rig. Could rescue some people.
It could be like part claymation and then we could
then we could meet Pokemon
robot chicken
characters.
Yeah,
along the way. You know, cultural collision.
It's the holiday seniors incarnated into a holiday short.
Yeah, it would be. I know I'd watch. Yeah. I know you'd watch. I don't know who else would, but
I feel like people might watch purely just to make fun of us.
That's I'm good with that.
I feel like people probably listen to make fun of us though too.
That could be, and I'm good with that too.
What else? Okay, what else are some good Christmas things? I can't think of anything. I think we ran through them.
Yeah, pretty much. We could go over foods and all that, but I think it's just probably a good time to wrap up. I will say, my prime rib is what we have for Christmas.
Okay. Okay.
What do you guys usually?
We're big on Christmas breakfast.
Mm.
My dad makes this cherry strudel. Mm. Makes my mouth water just thinking about it. I'm excited.
You'll have it soon enough.
Yes, soon enough. All right, you got anything else to add?
I don't, other than happy holidays to everyone out there. Merry Christmas, happy New Year.
Hopefully we'll be
back. Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, everything.
We'll be back right after New Year, I would assume.
We will, and maybe we'll get back on a regular schedule. Hope to do that.
Hey, all I'll have to do is work, so there's nothing to keep us from being on a regular schedule.
You're right. That'll be outstanding. That's right. Congratulations, and
wow.
You're pretty much there.
Yeah. Now I just got to hang out with you hooligans all the time.
Yeah. Well, Could be worse.
Yeah, that's true.
Slightly.
Stay tuned to Cyclone Fanatic throughout the rest of the week for more hoops reaction. There's a women's game Tuesday as well as the men's game in Cincinnati. So stay tuned to Cyclone Fanatic for all of your news and notes throughout the rest of the week. For Rob Gray, I'm Jared Stansberry. Have a happy holidays, everybody.